We will call the meeting to order at 8:30. The clerk will note the roll. We're going to continue on with bonding hearings, and this morning we've got a continuation of what we started with last week. The Ford Building report is something that we've been interested in. We're going to call on Mr. Rhodes to come forward and give a little bit of an update on what the group worked on last summer. This is something from our omnibus bill last year. We asked a working group to be convened. I know there are various members involved in this, and we certainly want to hear how this went. After the Ford Building, we're going to hear from the CAP Board, Military Affairs, and then some amateur sports, but I believe we've got some tomorrow as well, so that's going to kind of be a folded in either today, tomorrow, or both. So we'll start this morning with my favorite chair, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. As you explained, through legislation, we formed this working group to deal with the Ford Building that's located on University Avenue. Everybody, I'm sure, knows where it's at. And this group of people, which had many many people from all over the University Avenue area, the church, St. Paul, legislators, staff, a little bit of everybody, including some professionals in building renovation, sat down and talked over a period of a few meetings, and there was a great synergy, a great excitement about what we could do to this facility other than tearing it down. And so through discussion, going back and forth, we came up with the recommendations that's in your report, that's in your packet. And the key of it is that as we were talking, we realized that if we go ahead with some renovation of the Capitol, that there's people that are going to have to be relocated from the Capitol complex, and we have a natural site in the fact that we have a building connected in the tunnel, through the tunnel system, that could be renovated and saved. Just so you know, that we spent approximately $25,000 a year to keep the building going. And there's no heat, there's no water, there's no electricity, and there's no certificate of occupancy at this time. We had a problem with the bricks on the front. They had to be removed. They were not thrown away. They were all numbered, and they're inside the building, so they could be replaced. There are approximately 18 or more Ford buildings around the country, just like this one. Ford Motors, much like Target, they have the same type of building wherever they go. And as Phyllis Kahn would say, not one has been torn down yet. So with that in mind, and with the idea that we may need some space to relocate people, the thought was, in the report, is that we have a historical building. They actually manufactured cars there. There's a Ford F logo F on the pillars. And that we could renovate it to use it for housing people. And they would be a cost of approximately a little over $10 million to $13 million to put it back to the way it was. And the reason why there's a differential is that it depends if the senators want private offices or cubes. And that makes a $3 million difference. So basically, we thought that this would be a natural area for that, and the best part would be, in the end, is that the building would then be used, after the renovation of the Capitol, could be used for housing boards and commissions, one-stop shop on the main floor. We could put a coffee shop in on the main floor. As you know, because it's bonded money, there's certain restrictions, but a small area can be used for rental for that type of facility. And it would keep the neighborhood alive. It was connected to the Capitol, as I mentioned, and it would save a historic site. And that's basically encapsulates what the members thought. There are some on your committee right here that could maybe want to chime in on this thing, but I think that's basically where it's at.
We have questions from committee members. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rhodes, has the report been viewed by the governor and the staff and others that are involved in the bonding process, and what is their take on that?
Well, this is not in the governor's recommendation, as you know, and so any legislation that comes forward is going to have to come through the legislature itself. And The question then is, it's kind of like the restoration of the Capitol. They're aware of it. It's not in their recommendation. And I want to make sure that we have two different things here. The renovation of the Capitol is the renovation of the Capitol. Bringing the Ford building back into service is a different issue. The two are not in the same linkage, even though they could be used to house people.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rose, I understand that. My question is, has the governor, even though he hasn't recommended, viewed the report and reacted one way or another to it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, we have not had any conversations about it, but they know what is going on with the report. That is, okay. That they know.
Mr. Chairman, as one follow-up question, has the report also said to try to maintain it at minimum heat and so forth? And I know the tunnel is open because of access to the parking lot. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
And are you going to continue to maintain a minimum heat, or is it not even available to the furnace to be able to do that part yet?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is no heat in the facility. There is no way of getting heat in there and there's no electricity, so you couldn't blow in heat. We had a mild winter this year, so probably the differential between the temperature extremes has not been that great, but it's not good for the building to be unheated. There's no question about that.
And then that follows up my final question. And what is the cost of doing the minimum amount of maintenance?
I'm going to have
to
ask my
resident. Put something in the capital budget for that part.
There's someone that knows
yep.
the answer to that.
Oh, I never travel without somebody who knows what they're doing. Wayne, can you... he's going to look through that. We'll get an answer for you.
Okay, very good.
Is that kind of like what would it cost to unmothball it and get it minimally operating?
Not even minimally operating. The report says that the building should be minimally heated, and in order for it so it doesn't deteriorate more, in order to do that, you have to at least do something with the heating system, and I don't know. But what I'm asking is, what is the minimum amount to be able to accomplish that goal, and if that's something we shouldn't address
we'll
instead
have
of the 10 to 13 million?
Much
Okay.
I think we.
I will. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We'll get back to you with the answer, exact answer. But I will tell you that it's not as simple as just saying we're gonna. There's nothing there to put in there. It's like. A car and saying we want to put air conditioning in, but there's no mechanics in it, and we have to decide, is it just blowing down the windows, or is it really...
Mr. Chairman, I understand that, but if that information be useful as we try to make a decision here.
Okay.
And my understanding is there's going to be a bill brought forward, Representative Loeffler or Tingelstad, and I'm wondering if we should maybe have a hearing on that next week. Is that bill ready, Diane, or not yet?
Mr. Chair, members, we have two bills actually growing out of the recommendations of the committee, and one is to deal with the Ford building itself, rehab and remodeling, so it's available for transition stage. The second one deals with the recommendation of the committee on how we charge rent for historical buildings, which we learned about through understanding how we got to a vacant building without heat.
You think they'll be ready next week?
The one has been introduced. The one on rents on historical buildings has been introduced, and I'm waiting for the jackets on the second one.
Okay.
They should be here this week.
But I think we'd like to hear. Maybe we can have you back with Representative Loeffler next week when we have both bills, and we can kind of get moving in more detail on what to do from here, because we'd like to get our bonding recs out. Well, I think we were going to plan on doing them possibly even tomorrow, but I think we'll bump it to next week. And we'd like to hear from, to get some details. I'm not ready to vote on something because I don't even know exactly what the cost is or what we should do. But I think Representative Dorman would like to have us moving them out here soon. And I think next Tuesday we'll probably hear your bill and probably do it on the fly as a committee and then just vote the bonding recs out next Tuesday. But I think they'll be helpful to have that. The more imperative one is, what do we recommend in terms of getting moving with? Do we put in a a heat plant just to start with, or should we do a big renovation or what? It's rather expensive, is my understanding.
Mr. Chairman, members, keep in mind that if you're going to use it to bring people in there, you're talking a minimum of over $10 million to get everything working, including the elevators, the life safety issues, the handicap issues. All those things are all back in play again.
Mr. Chairman, just one question, if I may. What was the cost to tear it down?
Wayne, what's the cost to tear the building down?
I thought it was 10, too.
You know what? Mr. Chairman, members, I think this is fair to say. We're not dealing with economics of it. It'd probably be cheaper to tear it down and do something else. But then we lose the significance, and you're going to have the wrath of Phyllis Conrad.
No, Mr. Chair, I understand that, but I thought last year that the recommendation to tear it down was about $10 million as well. So I'm surprised that the renovation is only 10.
We'll put together both information of the cost to tear it down and the cost to heat it.
Very good, thank you.
I have Representative Finstad, Kahn, and Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few questions here. My first one is based on probably a lot of hypothetical future decisions that were made, but you talked about the potential of using the office space if we were to fund it to be renovated for temporary Senate space if we pass the restoration of the Capitol project.
That's correct.
My question with that would be, where would the Senate space be if we did not go this route, if we pass the restoration of the Capitol?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Finstad, I don't want to steal the thunder from the CAP board, but basically the issue is this. If they do renovation of the Capitol and they have to move a section of the Capitol out, you have to bump people up the line, and it could be two bumps instead of one, because people would have to move to two different times and back and forth. Whereas this building was renovated, this would then be able to use, they move them in there and then they move them back to their offices, that type of thing. That's basically the long and the short of the answer of it. And that's what, as we discussed in our meetings, that's what came to fore as a perhaps a good idea to use as what they call swing space. The people will have to be relocated someplace. They could be pushed into the hallways. They could be pushed into another building in the Capitol complex that has some space available for them. It's all over the place. What makes this building unique is that it's in the tunnel system, and it'll be one move them in, move them out, move the next group in, move them out. When you're all done, and I'm not selling the project, but the discussion of the committee was, when you're all done, you're going to have a usable building for others in the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick follow-up. You intrigued me with the idea of putting the senators in the hallway, but my question would be then, so if this is the route we take for the short term as temporary office space for the senators, what would the long-term plan be? And maybe you touched on it, but that's a 2 or 3 or whatever it may be temporary space, but are we thinking long-term as far as what we put in now will meet the needs of 5, 10, 15 years?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the long-range thoughts was to make it into a dormitory for greater Minnesota legislators to live in. and then we need somebody to be like a resident administrator of the dorm. actually, the long-range use could be, if you can envision utilizing it for boards, commissions, office meeting rooms, that type of thing. It could be used to house some departments that are looking for relocation, to take them out of a rental unit, put them into this facility. And the crowning glory could be that we would utilize it for all the way down the line for many factors. It doesn't have to be, one could move in there for a while or transfer back and forth, but you'd have a facility that is usable, connected to the tunnel, and historic, all at the same time. That's the plus, I would say.
Last question?
Yeah, last follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, then, and I know that your department has taken this into consideration, but I would hope that if this is the route we go, that the temporary decisions are made with the financial thought of long-term implications. So if we're putting, $3, $4, $5, $10 million into renovating this to the point where it could be used as office space for the Senate, that we're not going to come back in 2 years and say, oh, by the way, we need $10 more million now to renovate it for the Board of Mental Health to use it. And then in 5 more years, we need 10 more to do it for this, that, or the other thing. So I guess my request would be that we make sure that we're not only looking at a temporary fix, but the long term as well.
That's correct.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being late, but one of the most graphic pieces of description we had was this wonderful chart showing all the similar buildings that Ford built all over the country with the piece of information that not one had ever been torn down.
Didn't I tell you that, members?
Oh, it did. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, just the re-emphasis of it. But the thinking, am I the only one? No, maybe Representative Solberg was here also when we did House Swing Space and Mechanic Arts Building, and that was kind of like summer camp or something like that. But it suddenly occurred to me, we had, I think, four people in classrooms on desks and with desks and that kind of thing, and staff were all in kind of bullpens and that sort of thing. A solution for the Senate, which is move them all doubled up into the Senate offices in the state office building. And that would, you know, there's got to be enough swing space maybe even in the state office building, in the state office building itself. We seem to be moving people around all the time and just start, maybe, I don't think the Senate did any cooperation when the House was being moved around, but since we're now into... We're now into the new regime of being nice across the party lines and across houses. Maybe we could coalesce some of the House offices or something like that. Seems to me there's a lot of people who have a lot of space around them and they could use a little bit less, perhaps. So we should propose that to the Senate in the conference committee bill.
Was it to that point?
Yeah, to that point. One of the things, though, that as we renovate the Capitol, and that's a little bit different space than this, and this building was renovated in a short period of time over summer and fall, and as a result of that, some of the workmanship was not nearly as good as what it should have been. When we moved in here, there were lots of problems with the building. It wasn't even completed yet when the session started, and you may not have that same kind of opportunity when you do the, or want to have that kind of opportunity when you do the Capitol.
Well, Chairman, I didn't say we should do it faster. I just said, I just said they could hang out together for a little longer time.
I have trouble hanging out with the senators when I have to hang out.
That's because you didn't go to all the classes on being nice.
I know.
You have those seminars on being nice.
Okay.
Just
your feet before you talk.
Now, who's your senator, Representative Molloy?
Higgins.
Yeah. Is it Higgins? Okay. Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The classes on being nice, they wouldn't even consider taking me, so...
Next time we'll make it compulsory.
Yeah, that might help for me. I just want to make a couple of points since I sat in on the meetings for our caucus from this committee on that process, and I want to thank Mr. Rhodes for and his people at the Department of Administration. I thought they ran the meetings very well, but. Just as a reminder, it was through this committee that we passed the legislation that said that we're not going to tear down the Ford building, and that it was through this committee's direction, too, that we were sent to figure out what exactly should we do to this. So I don't really care to get into the issue of going back and looking now because it would cost X amount of dollars to renovate this. Versus X amount of dollars to tear it down. I guess I'm not willing to engage in that argument anymore. I think we've made a commitment, and I think that regardless of how any one person feels about this, we've got the opportunity to invest some money into a piece of property that the state already owns, and I'm a very sound supporter of moving the Senate offices over there and using this building as swing space. I think it's a tremendous opportunity for state government to save some money too, because we will renovate the Capitol at some point in time. It's inevitable. When that happens, I'm not in favor of going out and renting space at the nearest possible position closest to the Capitol to suit the senators, and then we have to spend the money to hook that building up electronically and security-wise for the senators out there. I think the Ford building is a perfect match for this, but when Representative Finstead made mention of the timelines out there, this is something that when you talked about near term instead of looking at long term, I think to be realistic, by the time we would pass legislation, start construction, move senators out, and complete renovation of the Ford building, we're probably looking at 10 years from now before that's all completed. At least that was my take. I'm looking to Representative Solberg, and he's nodding. So we're already tying, this building for 10 years in as far as transition space. And I thought that when we look at this long term, rather than looking at renting this out necessarily for commercial business purpose or anything like that, we have a number of our boards that are renting space across the Twin Cities area, like the MSHA board out in St. Louis Park and others. Why couldn't we co-locate a lot of these small boards into that building and be able to use one meeting have one meeting room instead of each one of them having have one receptionist and look at utilizing some efficiency. So I think there's some great opportunities there, but this will require state government to spend some money to invest into a piece of property that we now own. And I think it's, when you already own the property now, this shouldn't be that difficult a decision, looking at should we invest some money into it. So those are my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There is a 2001 study that was done on what to do with the building, and page 7 has old estimates of what it would cost under 7 scenarios. Renovating the existing building at that time was $9.3 million, and then it was renovate the building and expand the second and third floor for $12.7 million. Demolish the building and construct a new building of comparable footprint for $18.8 million. The next one is to renovate and expand the building to maximum size is $20 million. The next one is demolish it and construct a new building to maximize the site, $25.9 million. The next one was to renovate and expand the building and build a 218-stall parking ramp for $24.2 million. And the last one is demolish existing building, construct a new building and a 324-stall ramp for $32.5 million. Of course, those are five-year-old figures,
right,
but at least it gives us an idea of the different scenarios that you could deal with. I guess the one from last year was $1.2 million to demolish it and then just delete 50 slots. That was the cheapest.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I had the decimal point in the wrong spot. My recollection.
Seemed kind of cheap. But anything else? Anybody else have? I think we're going to have Representative Loeffler come back, if you don't mind, when the bills are ready to go. Hopefully we'll be ready next week. And we are going to have kind of a mini omnibus bill, and so my hope is we can roll in something that everybody in the room can kind of agree on. Last year we just put on the moratorium and set up the working group, so at least we did something that saved the building. But I think in terms of long term, we're going to have to really think about this. My suggestion is that we think fast, because if the bonding recs are going to pass out next week, we have to have at least an idea of what to recommend to the Capital Investment Committee. I'm not sure that we're going to be able to get much out of them, but at least we can come up with some ideas for them. Okay? Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Appreciate it. Who was the first one here today outside of myself? Representative Finstead moves approval of the minutes from September 27th. Okay, September 27th. Anyone have any questions, additions, deletions? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Representative Solberg moves approval of the March 8th meeting. Any questions on that one? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, those are adopted. Next, we're going to go to the CAP board. And we'd have the CAP board come forward. And we're going to try to get everything wrapped up here by quarter to 10 or so. Is the amateur sports, are they here? I think we wanted them tomorrow. If I know. They're on the agenda, but do we have them for tomorrow? Okay. Is the amateur sports here? I think I told them tomorrow. So we're gonna scotch amateur sports off the agenda at item 7, and we're just gonna do CAP board and military affairs. So we'll start with the CAP board. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Do you have any handouts for us?
Not just yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Okay.
So go ahead and introduce yourselves, and we'll. Listen to this. I know some of us have been very interested in this, and we want to find out what our options are for the Capitol and the Capitol complex. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nancy Stark. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Capitol Area Architectural and Planning Board. I have with me today former House member Ray Farisee and one of our friends advocates for the state capitol, as well as Mr. Paul Mandel, who you all know is principal planner for the CAP board. I'd like to be very brief and then go into a question period. And, of course, Mr. Farisee has a few comments he would like to make. Since about 1985 up to about 1998, the Capitol building has had close to $44 million worth of exterior stabilization, restoration, and, in other words, buttoning up the building from the exterior. In 1998, the CAP board came forward with the first of the full interior restoration requests, and this was for the design funding for schematic design development and construction documents, as well as pre-design for the interior restoration. The monies for pre-design were acquired in 2000, and in 2001, the pre-design was completed. Many of you folks, also Senate, and obviously other members of the Capitol tenant group participated in that pre-design, either on advisory committees or tenant committees. In 2002, we came forward again requesting monies to continue the design work. That was 2002, 2004, and finally in 2005. Our request was for the full design, but schematics were awarded in 2005. So all totaled 7 years to acquire schematic design. Our current request followed on the heels of the pre-design. And one of the things that we did, we sat with finance as well as the governor's office last summer before we prepared our capital budget request. And we wanted to go over, particularly with finance, the way that we were going to present the request. And one of the things was that this request for $26.4 million would focus on the east wing as the most critical wing of the Capitol and phase one of the restoration. That east wing has many of the code deficiencies that you folks have long heard about, and it's most in need of infrastructure upgrades, as well as we're talking mechanical, electrical, HVAC, and security systems. The request also included all design work, more detailed design work for the East Wing, a temporary relocation of East Wing tenants, and full restoration of all the floors. Of course, when the governor came out with his bonding recommendations, I can say that on behalf of the CAP board, as well as the friends and many others, there was great disappointment that the governor did not carry the Capitol building in his bonding bill. However, the board and the friends are encouraged by the consensus of public opinion that this project is very worthy and very necessary. So at this point in time, responding to recommendations and comments that we have heard from Senate leadership to certainly allow the detailed design of the East Wing to go forward, to be a continuum of the schematic design that is just now getting underway for the bull restoration, and to answer any and all, hopefully, outstanding questions that there might be, the CAP Board is proposing a revised request of the $26.4 million to $6.1 million in funding this year, with the balance of the East Wing funding in 2007. And I'd like to go over just a quick review. There are three parts to our $6.1 million request. 1.8 is to design out in detail the East Wing. 2.9 is for move, relocation, setup of swing space, and hopefully not having to double bump other agencies or people in order to have the tenants of the East Wing be as close to the Capitol as possible, but we take in worst case scenario. And then $1.4 million is for the dome repair and restoration. Although the 2005 legislature directed that the dome restoration be done through private funding, the public response after 2005 has been very clear that the dome is the state's responsibility. The 2005 centennial brought thousands of Minnesotans to very special events. It was a very successful year for the commission and the Friends. And by funding the dome now, the Capitol building would be ready for the coming of the state's sesquicentennial centennial by 2008 to have that restoration done. And at this point, I'll let Mr. Farisee speak with you folks.
Good morning,
thank
Mr. Farisee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Farisee. I'm on the board of the Friends of the Capitol. Friends got created about a year or so ago during the centennial of the Capitol. We became the fiscal arm of that commission. And in our efforts, we've been trying to make sure that this Capitol that had... Last year we had two open houses. We had a total of 12,000 people just come to see the building. I truly believe that the people of this state really feel it's their building. It doesn't belong in anybody's legislative district. It's all of ours. And to make sure it's around for those who follow us, we feel that these restorations have to get underway and now. We did make an effort to go out, as was requested by the legislature in the previous legislation, to see if the public would pick up the cost of doing something with the dome. The reaction by those who would normally be looked to for contributions was completely negative. They said, no, that is the legislature's responsibility. We'll get into other things. We will try to talk to you about maybe restoring flags and things like that in the building, but we're not going to get into the actual structure of the building. So that was our effort, and it met with no success. The request that's being made here today is hopefully the first step of getting this thing really completed. We're hopeful, and I understand that you have bonding bill years, that we can get these dollars, the 6-1, off and running, and hopefully next year, albeit not normally a bonding year, that they can actually step in and start doing some of the actual the remaining bonding to get this project off and running. People love this building, and I think you do. I worked in this place for 10 years, and I still love coming into this building. And I think it should be that way. It's our home, it's our workplace, it's everything that we've ever thought about as having as a public building.
By the way, other states have been going out of their minds as far as paying money to restore their capitals all over the place. Major, major dollars being spent in all sorts of states to renovate their buildings. So we're not sort of out there just leading the way. Others have already started treading down those paths. I request that there are hope that you will give serious consideration. We've got to get that dome fixed. We are going to have major problems if that isn't addressed. And these other steps, I think, are very appropriate as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Piercy. Mr. Mandel, did you have any comments or your technical advice? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Mandel, Principal Planner for the CAP Board. In response to Representative Finstad's question earlier during the board discussion, we currently have already started the schematic design effort that was funded in 2005. After a lengthy process, we selected Hamel Green Abramson of the Twin Cities with Schooley Caldwell out of Ohio. They've worked on the Ohio State Capitol and the Kansas and Utah State Capitol, and a representative from Hamel Green is here today. We are in that process that will be completed by next October, and that's why it's critical that this design process continues rather than lose the opportunity cost. But part of that schematic is intended, as Nancy Stark spoke, the pre-design was done in 2001. Since that time, we've had 9/11, we've had a lot of security changes, we've had staffing changes, we've had technology changes. So part of their job is to look at all the changes and to revisit the pre-design. We make no assumptions about where people should be moved or who they should be moved with, and there are ideas already floating. Speaker Spigum had the idea that maybe the senators could come over here and double bunk with some of the state reps that would be favorably inclined. Senator Langstedt spoke about using the Great Hall for the senators and then figuring out where the staff should. So we don't want to presuppose or assume anything. We want those discussions to take place during the schematic discussions, find out where people have to, you know, how they have to be co-located, and then answer those questions. So we did not we purposely left that question unanswered, and that will be answered in the coming months. The Ford building is a very, very convenient solution to that because it keeps it probably closer than going down the hill to, say, Centennial or DOT or something like that.
Thank you. Okay, questions? Representative Mullery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Farisi, since it's my understanding, you were on the original design team for Cass Gilbert. Why didn't you plan this?
Well, I talked to Cass about it. And, we thought we could have built that in it, but it didn't work. And you folks have... society has just moved so fast and has done so many great things. But we got 100 years out of this building, and let's get a couple hundred more before whatever happens.
Other questions or comments? Representative Kahn and then Blaine.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and either Nancy or Paul, does that 1.38, does that completely do the dome so that the dome, that's everything, not just the leaks and repairs and so forth?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it does. All due respects to Cass Gilbert, there were some details that Mr. Gilbert actually had not figured out for the dome. And one is that the dome is constructed on the exterior of marble, which is very porous. And he had not constructed a sound system for the water to weep through from the marble through a cavity and then to the inside inner brick lining of the dome. So part of that 1.3 restoration includes the addition of a weeping system at the very base of the dome as it goes into the drum area. And so there is some water intrusion work besides the work of the interior restoration of paint to the inside of the dome.
Then,
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, one of that. Well, that's the part that I think is really a good idea. The idea that the dome will be completely ready for the sesquicentennial is just great. But the next one is: do we really need $2.9 million for the move and swing space preparation and future relocation? Since they're not going to be relocating in this year, could that money be chunked be cut down and some of it be put into the Ford building?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, excuse me, and Representative Kahn, when we prepared the capital budget request, the Ford building and the opportunity or convenience, as Paul said, to use that building, the report had not come through yet. So we took the worst case scenario that, in fact, to keep the tenants that were going to be relocated out of the East Wing and then subsequent out of the other wings, the West and the North Wing, into a location that would be in close proximity to the Capitol building and quite probably on the tunnel system, it might in fact need to bump some existing tenants off the tunnel system or out of other buildings. Now, if the Ford building would come online and it would be granted the monies it needs to be restored, I think there could be some compromise in that 2.9. But I would hate to delete the 2.9 at this point if Ford does not go forward.
Also, it's critical in talking with some of the Senate leadership, it's critical that the money for the relocation be done now, because in one way or another, when we get the construction dollars, what we want to do is we want to have the relocation space available so that we don't waste time moving people, and then we can get a head start so that the time that they're out of their offices is minimized. Also, with regards to the dome work, this work will involve scaffolding the entire rotunda. So if it's done, if it's funded this year, it can be ready for the sesquicentennial. If it's not funded this year, there's no way it can be done. And when they have these events in the rotunda, you'll be looking at peeling paint and falling plaster again.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd put that as one of our highest priorities to certainly get that done. I don't know. I guess Do you take your orders from the governor, or are you a multi? No. Oh,
no.
Great. Okay. I would like then to request a revised request that would work out what little you need from that relocation money, and to put exactly what we need into the Ford building. So I think going up to Lauren Solberg's, not just the minimal cost to preserve it and keep it going, but what we'd need to really start going on the swing space project.
To make it usable.
So, I don't know if we, maybe two figures, the amount to do the whole, I don't know if that's $10 million, and we're going to look at what that demolition fee was. And do you remember what the demolition line was in the last budget?
1.178.
It was only one. Oh, okay, not 10. It would have been 10.
That's the wrong place.
But the, I guess I'd like to see two things: what it would cost to finish it as quickly as possible, and what it would cost to just get a real start on doing it, so that we could finish it up in the next phase.
Mr. Mandel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, you're talking about finishing the Ford building then?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll have to coordinate with admin and get more refinement from their numbers so we know what's...
Yeah, two figures on the Ford building. And one of the things I want you to do is to redo that $2.9 million relocation.
Assuming we're using the Ford building.
Yes. Yeah, and assuming that the Senate's not relocating as fast as we thought they were. I think when you're doing this, or you can convince me why all that's needed now when they're not going to relocate until after the dome is finished. But I also, so I want two things. What you need to do a kind of a minimal, sensible start on fixing the Ford building, and what you'd need to do the whole thing, and also relooking at the relocation costs. Three things.
Is that understandable or not really?
Mr. Chair, I think it's a very smart question, because
for a change,
it is something that, could come into question, the 2.9 figure. most importantly, I think, is for you to understand to keep the design going. The schematic design will be completed, I will say, October, possibly early part of November this year. The design team can then fold right in to the detailed design of the East Wing, if it's funded in this session. Therein, they can also be working on the details for relocation. That's why we were requesting the 2.9 to be paralleled with the design of the East Wing. Well, there's a lot of detail in determining what is needed in the swing space.
What I want is I want the Ford building paralleled into that computation, and I just told you I could do the relocation of the Senate in 5 minutes on a pad, legal pad, not even on a computer. So,
Mr. Ferris,
Mr. Chairman, one other thing that I think comes up about
free.
Not being in the governor's proposal. The governor's staff has reviewed the 26 proposal, and was, I thought, favorably disposed for it. The big problem, at least in reading the papers, was that the Senate wasn't supposedly ready to move. And we have been doing our talking with senators, and the meeting we had this recently, I came away with the impression that they are now ready and have accepted the fact that this has got to be done. And so that was one of the stumbling blocks about this getting into actually the governor's budget, where was the Senate on this? But I think it's now favorably disposed.
We aren't going to have wrecking balls coming in while the senators are in their offices, are we?
No.
Okay, Representative Blaine.
Who said that? Go ahead.
I just had a couple of questions, and I'm thinking a lot down the same lines as Representative Kahn here. If we can maybe gain some efficiencies and save some money by maybe looking at doing some of that Ford building work along the same lines, I agree with my friend Phyllis here on that. But when I look at your handout here, and you've got the 1.8 for the East Wing design and the 1.3 for the dome repair and restoration, and I know that there's ongoing maintenance and work always to be done with a structure, 150 years old or whatever, but in the near term, is this the major renovation that we're looking at? I mean, there isn't another wing after the East Wing that's got to be... There is?
Yes.
Mr. Mandel, if you could help us with that.
Mr. Mandel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, the East Wing is, as Nancy spoke, the first of the three wings.
Okay.
And... in discussion with finance, I mean, the full package, and we've been carrying these numbers since 2000. Back in 2000, at the time of pre-design, it was roughly $53 to $55 million for the building over. Inflation, added deterioration of the building, et cetera, is now a total of $73 to $79, depending on how long it takes to phase it all in. It could go higher to even in the 80s. But it would do one wing at a time, relocate that wing, because the work we have to do, this is the first full renovation of the entire building that has ever been done in the 100 years. I mean, we've done sections like the chambers and some of the office suites, but we've never done ground floor to the roof before in its history. And so we've been very clear that each wing gets a biennium in effect. And it was finance's recommendation that we approach it this way rather than look at securing the entire appropriation one time and then working our way down. We don't want to relocate the entire, the state of Utah, the state of Washington, the state of Texas closed their entire capital for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's not our recommended approach. We're following the approach that Wisconsin and Ohio and Kansas and many other states, Michigan, others have done, where they do one wing at a time, minimal impact of relocating that group. You move them back, and the relocation space serves each group at its own sequence time. So this is the first of three phases.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mandel, so then if I understand you correctly, you're saying that each wing would take a biennium to complete the the renovation. Is that correct?
It would take. It would. We're sequencing it in a biennium at a time for request. It would not take 2 years of construction. In there, you've got design and everything else. The construction.
So it would take longer than that. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine. The East Wing is the longest construction period because it's the most code deficient and the most in need of repair. Since it had no chamber, it never got much work done on it. We're envisioning anywhere from 14 to 18 months of actual construction once all the design work is done. It might be shorter. We don't know. We'll learn a lot more details during the schematic as far as how long it's all going to be taking. The rest of the wings will be no more than 1 year in construction period at most.
But when
we're sequencing the request to a biennium at a time.
Mr. Chair, in Mr. Mandel, so then if we're seeking funding a biennium at a time and we're already been contemplating this in the past for however long, I guess this is just kind of, in my mind, further supports the idea of using the investment in the Ford building as swing space then, because this could be a long drawn out process. And just going back to what I said earlier, if you already own the property and we're not, and we've already committed that we're not going to tear it down, we might as well invest some money and use it for something. And when it's already connected by the tunnel, I just think it's the right thing to do. So thank you, Mr. Mandel.
Does anyone else have any questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, just for further clarification, in discussions with admin, they have some more refined numbers that we could be part of the discussion next week when you have them back for the bill hearing, as far as what is involved with the Ford building. Obviously, if we're using it for relocated space, we're talking far more than the minimal heat that was discussed as the bare bones. So you got the bare bones, get it heated so it doesn't deteriorate further, get it ready for a Senate and the swing space, which would... merely, we might give you two levels, the full finish, you know, top level deal, or the assuming cubicles and temporary, literally temporary space. So I think we can work with admin on those numbers for next week. Yeah.
Okay. We're planning on, just for members' information, we're going to try to get a meeting set up with the House DFLers here on the committee. We're going to have a chart this year where we have... recommendation for projects without recommendation, meaning it's kind of a neutral, and then items of that are blackballed or we would not recommend. So we'll have kind of three categories, and we'll have you just put 1, 2, and 3 on your sheet. Mr. Shipman's going to make up a chart working with Ms. Roberts in terms of what projects we have before our committee, and then we're going to just set a threshold that if you get, you know, more than 5 votes for your positive recommendation, so if the capital gets that, then they would be on the positive list and so forth. And if we get 5 members who blackball something, it's probably going to end up down on that list. So we're going to try to have a list handed out here today or tomorrow, but we would like to get our recommendations out Tuesday, no later than Wednesday of next week. So that just to give you a time frame. The other thing I want to mention, speaking of Cass Gilbert, is there is a Cass Gilbert house in my district. I know there's a bunch in St. Paul, but in Minneota, Minnesota, there's one with a big spiral on it and so forth. And so I do have one Cass Gilbert house. That's I don't know if anybody has a list of every Cass Gilbert design place in the state. Do you have one, Ms. Stark?
Mr. Chair, one of our 3 architectural advisors has done a lot of research into Cass Gilbert's work, and he has researched, I think, in the upper Midwest, there are something like 35 private homes, residences that Gilbert designed, and he's done a number of churches. He's done a number of homes out in the Montana district, too. So... He was a very busy architect, very busy. I'm convinced he never slept.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for your revised request, members. We're going to try to get your information back to us as soon as we can, and we'll be in contact.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we have military affairs. This will be our last one because amateur sports will be up tomorrow. And we have 4 items, I believe, under military affairs. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys would introduce yourselves, familiar faces.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Major General Larry Shalito. I'm the Adjutant General of the State of Minnesota, the Minnesota National Guard. And with me is Mr. Terry Palmer, and he is our lead legislative contact person and deals with the state affairs. In this session, what I'd like to do is just give a general overview of our proposal and why we believe it's so important, and Mr. Palmer then will get into the specifics dealing with it. As you may be aware, you should be aware, I'd be shocked if you were not aware, tomorrow we'll be flying with the governor and the leadership of the House and Senate. We'll be preparing to send 2,600 Minnesotans off to Operation Iraqi Freedom. Since 9/11, the state of Minnesota has received over 11,175 deployment orders to send our troops to over 33 different countries around the world. The primary four were Bosnia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and now Iraq. And since 9/11, what we have learned is in the state of Minnesota, the military is defined as the local armory, what we refer to as the training and community center. Minnesota owns or has in it 63 community centers, armories. We have two air bases, one in Duluth and one in Minneapolis. And then we have Camp Ripley with 53,000 acres, a nationally award-winning natural conservation area, probably one of the most pristine areas in the state of Minnesota. What we have learned is that in this deployment of going to Iraq, 585 different zip codes are listed by the people who are going to be deployed. There is not one corner in the state of Minnesota that is not represented. And as we deal with this, we take a look at, and as stewards of the state dollar, I want to just put into context why it's so important for you to support our proposal and allow us to continue to serve the state of Minnesota. Not only do we do our traditional drilling, which, by the way, brings in close to $300 million federal dollars to the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota National Guard is, in essence, because of payroll and so forth, taxes, is a net taxpayer rather than consumer. But also what we have done is we have linked the state of Minnesota to the capital. There's a number of states, and I can give you documented evidence, that has said we will build only where there is a population center. And those states are struggling. The number one recruiting state in the nation is the state of Minnesota. Why? Our best recruiting area is in southwest Minnesota, the 151 that just came back from Iraq, Morris, southwest. They are providing an economic engine that helps support. There's a lot of people. Now, my previous life was in education, the Minsky system, and we have a lot of people that want to come back, and in my case, Alexandria, and live there. The wage scale is not the most dynamic. However, we oftentimes say that the National Guard is probably one of the best part-time jobs in the country. So they can get that little extra income to make that little difference and pay for that boat or that four-wheeler or those things that they value, i.e. the quality of life in the state of Minnesota. But again, as preservers of the state resources, the question you would probably ask is, well, what else can you do for us? I will say that we have connected every one of those training centers to be fiber optically connected and therefore video teleconferencing centers. We used, in partnership with the Secretary of State, we conducted all the state's election judge training where they could drive to the local community or nearby training center and they would then conduct that training. We are working in a variety of other areas and activities to just make sure that we are open and supportive of not only education, but of state government and local municipalities. So that's just the general context of it. And I'll turn it over at this time to Mr. Palmer, who will give the details of our request.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Terry Palmer, Department of Military Affairs, Comptroller. Our capital budget request this year is for a total of $8.629 million, $5.2 million in asset preservation, $1 million in facility life safety, $1.029 million in range indoor firing range lead abatement and conversion, and then $1.4 million in ADA compliance. The $5.2 million request in asset preservation addresses deferred maintenance items that will continue to support the facility's structure and allow it to be used for many more years. Such things as windows and roofs, major sanitary issue replacements, functionality improvements, new electrical data cabling, all that, things that make the building functional and usable in today's world, and some aesthetics and comfort issues, new paint, new floor coverings and things like that. We expect to get a match of 75 or 50% federal dollars, depending on the scope of the work done under that category. $1 million life safety, that addresses such deficiencies as fire and smoke alarms, sprinklers, emergency egress lightings and ventilation systems, and we will be able to, at least under current rules, match that with 75% of federal funding. The indoor firing range lead abatement and conversion for $1.029 million. The issue, the Minnesota National Guard no longer uses the indoor firing ranges. They're much too expensive to operate because of lead and the costly filtration and disposal of the hazardous materials. So we're proposing to convert those spaces, to clean them up and convert them to more functional uses, classrooms, storage facilities, those things that were deficient in the facilities where they're located. And for a lot of that work, we should be able to receive 50% federal match for that. Under ADA, $1.4 million, that addresses entryways that are not accessible for people with disabilities. It also improves the lavatory facilities, making them handicapped accessibilities, and removes some of the room barriers where the doorways are too narrow to allow handicapped access. And we should be able to get a 75% federal match with that dollars. And this is the governor's recommendation. His budget includes our total request, so we're pleased to see the governor supporting us for this. I think you've received the backlog book. In that book, it lists each facility by location, and it shows the kind of work that is outstanding in the facilities that we currently are not able to accomplish because it's not been, we don't have the money to do that. There's over $24 million in backlog in that book. And the book also shows the major work that's been done in the facilities over the last several years. The current approach is to batch these projects together. So if we can receive sufficient funding, what we'll do is go and have the projects bid with neighboring communities. So we'll do several facilities in adjacent counties. And by doing that, not only do we get economies of scale with the construction and replacement piece, but we also are able to leverage more federal money by doing that. Because if we did the projects separately, a lot of them would not qualify for federal match. So by doing it this way, we can also stretch the state dollars. The typical, we looked at a Stock Center facility. It was about 66% state and 33% federal if you did the project separately. But by batching them, it comes up to about 50-50 with the federal government. So we're able to do that. The repairs and upgrading to our facilities are critical. We have an aging inventory of buildings. 56% of the buildings are over 40 years old. 19% of those are over 70 years old, so we're dealing with some fairly inadequate structures. The electrical service is typically inadequate. There's a lack of data cabling for computer systems. HVAC systems are inadequate in today's standards for air turnover and quality. And then energy efficiency is also a great issue in a lot of our facilities. The other problem we have is the federal funding for facilities has been lagging for the last several years because of all the other places where the defense dollars are going, we've not been able to replace any of the older buildings, so it's absolutely essential we take care of what we have. And as the general talked about, we've deployed any number of soldiers from all around the state, so this is a great time to do some of this work because we don't have that relocation issue. There's a minimal full-time staff in the buildings, and most of the drilling members are not in those facilities. So it's a great opportunity for us to get some of this work done, and when the soldiers return, they'll come back to a functional, newer, updated facility. We take great pride in executing the money that the legislature gives us. Out of the 2002 capital budget, we've spent 93% of the asset preservation money already. We've spent 95% of the ADA money, and we spent 93% of the facility life safety money. From the 2005 asset preservation appropriation, we've already encumbered 92% of that, and we're prepared to execute any of the dollars that we receive in this session, too. So, I guess in closing, Mr. Chair, we would appreciate the committee's support on our budget requests and be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Solberg and Kahn.
Mr. Chair, gentlemen, I just paged through the book, and of course I went to my own. And Grand Rapids facility. And I noticed in 2001, you spent $140,000 to replace the roof. And in 2005, an upgrade facilities, it's over $1.5 million or $1.4 million, but you also replaced the roof. Tell me that roof lasts more than 4 years.
The roof lasts more than 4 years.
Now prove it to me that you didn't replace it and then replace it. Or I hope you have better planning than that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, one is I don't know the detailed answer on that. We will get that answer to you. Also, I would point out that often there's some phase work that could be done. So that might be an answer. I'm hoping on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, a lot of those facilities were built in sections. And the way they were constructed, there was a main building, and then over the years you actually added on the administrative space. So there are separate roof issues dealing with the drill floor and the flat part of the roof on the front of the building, too. So I'm assuming that's what happened, but we will get the answer to you, sir.
Okay. Well, I hope so, too. Mr. Chairman, there is one question I do have, and that is, do you have a priority list of your asset preservation projects?
Representative Solberg, yes, we do. A lot of it has to do with the timing of the money that we receive, because some of the undone work becomes more critical if it lags. And so that list is a little fluid, but we do have a list of outstanding work.
Mr. Chairman, I hope you'd be able to share that list with the committee.
Could we get that by Monday? Okay. Anything else, Representative Solberg?
No, that's it. That was my main question. The other one was a frivolous one, hopefully.
Okay. Representative Kahn?
Just Chairman and members, like Representative Solberg, I also first turned open to Minneapolis for a building which used to be in my district and no longer is. The building wasn't moved, the district line was moved. But it's a building I consider to be an awfully new building, only to discover that recently completed projects of $51,000 and backlog list of projects is 63,000 on what I would consider probably one of the newer public buildings in our area. One of the things I noticed is that, and one of the things I wonder is how much you're doing on these buildings in terms of sustainable buildings or in terms of, you know, I would say green construction. And the first thing that struck me is here's a lawn sprinkler system, of which seems to me a lawn is one of the most unnecessary things for that building. Have you done any investigation of the use of things which are going on all over that area, like rain gardens and native prairie garden, native plant gardens and things like that, and not getting into the first expense of putting in a lawn sprinkler system, but then the continued expense of watering and the bad environmental aspects of of doing that. And a double question is, several years ago we passed, it was actually in a bill by Linda Boudreau, and she accepted an amendment of mine, which put, for older buildings, put what was called, made the State Buildings Commission develop what was called the Conservation Code. And it wasn't for energy conservation. What it was to be able to, you say, there are, if you had an older building, there are certain things in the code that don't make any sense, that can often cost you great expense, you know, changing timber, and this was done, and Fitty worked on it, and apparently had a very good set of recommendations, which have been an international model in terms of, for example, that you don't necessarily replace, just because you're doing code renovation, you don't have to put the outlets 20 inches apart or whatever, as long as there are some outlets in the room. So the two questions are you looking at any sustainable practices? And first, this one leaped out at me because of the grounds, and I started looking for more lawn through the book, but haven't found them yet. And how are you using, and I don't know what age building, I haven't looked at the detailed rules. I think because I had authored the legislation, I was put on the committee to look at it, but it soon became too boring and too technical for me to stay there. But have you looked at those codes and looked as if you're able to use the less expensive conservation codes for doing some of these older buildings?
Whoever wants to handle that one.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, even though we receive federal funding, we use state procurement and contracting rules. So if there are codes that exist in state statute or by city code, we follow all those. So if there's a sustainable development requirement, that's exactly what we'll follow.
Well, there obviously isn't. We don't have sustainable requirements in any of our codes, and the conservation code is an option, so unless you look for it, you're not going to find it.
Are we sure, so. Representative Kahn, that that's in place?
Yes.
We're okay.
Yes. I've never heard of it before. I did. Oh, well, it was done a very long time ago. It was done quite a while ago, and it took, it was the kind of thing where you do it, and you think, okay, they set rules in 3 months, and I think it took 3 years to do the rules.
Okay.
But I think the state building code,
and
it's very useful. And the suggestion for doing this was brought to me by somebody who had done a lot of renovation
for
of older buildings,
and
was frustrated by the kind of silly things he had to do, which made sense if you were building a new building, but really weren't necessary for life and safety.
I swear that got hung up somewhere, but Representative Mueller, you remember this?
Mr. Chairman, you said the conservation code. Are you talking about the energy code?
No, it's not an energy code.
Really?
The word conservation code was put in there, but it had to do with the conservation of older buildings, not
you don't have to put the outlets every whatever it is 25 inches.
Right.
You could just...
I don't know. I imagine in setting the rules, they must have had what age... It's not for just historic buildings, I believe. It's for any kind of the construction that was considered decent when it was done and is now outdated, but you still have a... So it's a question. You don't want to compromise life and safety,
right?
But you don't want to do a whole bunch of things which you could say are really just cosmetic.
And that's on private homes, too?
It certainly is on that. The question is, I don't know if the state's been looking at it or...
For our buildings.
These people. I mean, this is just a whole set of buildings. We've got a whole bunch who ought to fall into that, whatever the limits are on that.
Any other questions that we have, members? Yeah, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just kind of curious. I was sort of looking through some of the numbers, and I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate. I was looking specifically. I noticed a lot of the facilities needed new sprinkler and or fire alarm systems, and just one example I came up with is on page 29, the Chisholm Training Center. It's a facility of 16,000 square feet, and it looks like the cost to repair to install the fire sprinkler and alarm system is $110,000, but the Faribault Training Center on page 45 is almost the same exact square footage, $15,000, and to do the same thing is only looks like 60,000. Guess I'm reading that wrong. I was just curious as to why there was $50,000 difference in doing the same thing in two different facilities.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I'm not sure. I'm not the architect, but I would imagine it has to do with the way the building was constructed when it was first built. So they're probably having to remove a roof in some instance, or the ceiling to accommodate that piping. In another instance, there's probably there's no flat ceiling. There's a gabled roof that allows them to just run the piping, but I don't know for sure. I would suspect that's the case.
In the Iron Range, we put everything in gold.
I had heard that, Representative Solberg.
So, it's our standard up there.
Yeah, gold standard. Got it.
Any other questions? Yeah, I'll leave it there on us.
Okay. Already just told me that we did.
Tomorrow, members, we're going to have Amateur Sports Commission, and then we're going to have individual bills. There's one related to military affairs that Representative Kahn has, and I'm thinking, are you fellas, someone going to be here to kind of comment on that? It's an individual bill on science.
This is on the, I know Ms. Roberts has been to it, and I would urge other people to go to it. Very exciting project that uses military, the National Guard, and aviation issues to teach science and technology to inner city schools. And it's I have lists of the schools that are currently doing it. It's they haven't been able to meet the demand. And I know I see both the executive director is there, but Denny Shields, who we all know, who's one of the board members, is on that. And I wondered if, and I know he's not going to be able to be here tomorrow. And this isn't a governor's recommendation, so I guess all he can do is answer questions that I that I give him. But there is, we had a very successful visit to Washington, where we talked to all members of the, well, we talked to both senators and representatives McCollum and Sabo, who have most of the districts. And I've never had a more successful visit to Washington. First of all, in getting to meet all of them, not even staff people, but having them all say, when we talk to them about the project, saying what, just saying, what can we do? I've never had anyone say that before. Maybe I don't ask them about such nice things. McCollum did make a comment, was that she didn't expect to see me coming on behalf of a military project. But maybe we could get Colonel Shields to say something about it today, since he won't be here tomorrow.
Would you like to say something in regard to the project tomorrow? Or? Our goal is to be done by 10, too, so we do have 2 minutes.
Okay.
Morning, Colonel.
And we understand the constraints that you're on, that you're not supposed to...
I appreciate that, Representative. First of all, Mr. Chair, excuse my address. I'm literally headed out to the airport with regard to the Camp Shelby deployment.
Well, we have such...
As Representative Kahn mentioned, I am, in fact, involved in the Starbase program. Just to explain the setup, it is a 501c3. It receives the majority of its funding through the federal government, specifically the Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Reserve Affairs. It's been a program that's been ongoing for 10 to 12 years. Minnesota was one of the pioneers. It's located at the 133rd Airlift Wing out at the Twin Cities Air Guard Base. I will tell you from the National Guard's perspective, it is one of the many things, one of the very, very visible things, though, that we use to connect ourselves with the community. General Shelotow talked about our recruiting successes in the state of Minnesota. Absolutely, we are number one in the nation. One of the reasons is that we do build our ties with the communities. The armories, for example, are our ties to the community. Starbase is another tie to the community. The board of directors for Starbase has made a decision that they want to expand. And in order to expand, planning dollars are needed. And that really is the essence of Representative Kahn's bill. This is not part of the governor's recommendation. It's a little out of cycle in terms of this just really hitting over the last couple of months. I guess really that's about all I can actually say about it. But it is a great program, and it will continue to receive our agency's support.
Okay. Well, it's helpful to know. So if tomorrow there's questions, we know that you're supportive and whatnot. So
absolutely, and I believe Mr. Palmer is going to be here.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
We'll probably have you come up just to say a few words, and the executive director is planning on being here tomorrow, I'm sure. I see her.
Yeah, I think she's got a couple other board members here too,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
So when the bill presentation comes, we'll get into the meat of it. The other thing is for the DFL members, if we could have you be in contact with Mr. Shipman about a time that we could meet in terms of these bonding proposals, and we'll get that list. We don't have it developed yet, but we'll get that done today and get that out to you. For the projects we know about, we don't know exactly the capital and Ford building, how that works in tandem, but if you like it as a high priority, you know, certainly mark it as such, and we'll try to make it work. But with that, I think we're all done. Does anyone else have anything for today? Okay, meeting adjourned.